Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
There's something quite special about having a previous guest back on, isn't there? It's nice.
It's nice. I can't believe, actually, it's over 2.5 over two years, nearly two and a half.
Yeah, November 21.
Stunning, really.
November 21, and what a change for him in terms of his outlook,
What's happened, approach,
and what he's done. And yeah, we talk about his MBA, but that's kind of only the half of it, isn't it? It's more of an attitude to lifelong learning, but the importance of non-clinical learning.
It's that mind shift.
Yeah.
That mind shift to say that actually it all does fit together. Mm. It's just whether people perceive it fits together.
And also I think Brad's he's a living example of it working too. Mm. He's got a dental practice that has great management systems, so you can step away from it. Mm-hmm. When he's there, he enjoys his clinical work. He's developing individually. So, yeah, I thought it was an absolutely fabulous episode.
Well, if he hadn't, he wouldn't have been able to do his MBA.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
So it's a good conversation.
Here we go again. It's another Dentology.
And it's funny because Dentology, we say it's the business of dentistry podcast. And I don't think that this gets any more true to that term, the conversation we're about to have
now. No, definitely. And they are intertwined and so important.
As they should be. So, very fortunate today. We have Dr. Brad Thornton joining us. And Brad is principal of Ivory Dental Practice in Leeds, serial entrepreneur and investor.
Serial entrepreneur. That's
and
that
also,
good one, isn't it?
Previous guest, all the way back in November 2021, when he joined us for episode 15. So, welcome back, Brad. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I've still not got over the fact that it took 14 other episodes to get me on, but you know. No, we're good. I'm joking.
In a situation that comes out like that, what we say is we practice on the first 14 to get good, and then we saved ourselves for you.
And yeah, I thought that's what it was.
I think you were busy.
Oh yeah, that was it.
Your episode when we did that back in November 21, we titled it Entrepreneurship, and I think that's still fitting because of all the things you do and the things you continue to do.
2 years,
but, yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Yeah.
That's actually gone really quick. Yeah.
How would you define yourself, entrepreneurship?
I think you know, entrepreneurship to me tends to be more of a mindset. And I guess it's a certain number of traits that you might have that, and it was actually weirdly considering the apprentice is on at the moment. Mm. I think, you know, the one thing that I ever remember Alan Sugar saying, I don't watch The Apprentice often, but he said one thing once when somebody described themselves as an entrepreneur and he said, look, you don't call yourself it, other people do. Mm. And I think it's a way in which you live life, sort of the way in which your sort of creative aspect of your being and brain and maybe a desire for challenge and difficulty shines through into business. Mm. And for me, you know, I've always had a certain restlessness in a positive way. I think there's moments where that potentially could be negative. When you know your life's balance falls out of whack with where your priorities lie, maybe it's hard to know that during it. It's often retrospectively look back and go, "Hang on a minute, maybe I need to rebalance." But yeah, I think it's a mindset. It's a desire to challenge yourself to do things, to push boundaries, and in business, you know, hopefully that goes well. But that's kind of where I see it.
No, I think it's a good answer. Good answer. I'd agree. I think you're right. I think mindset gets talked about a lot. And I think a lot of people kind of just push it to one side, being all this namby-pamby thing. It does change your outlook. And it also goes into the people around you as well. Mm. If you're positive, and I don't mean just stupidly positive with no basis, but if you genuinely have a plan and you're delivering that plan and you're explaining to you why it's good to be part of this process, where we're going and what we're doing, I think it is. It's infectious. People love it. Mm.
Yeah, and I think because entrepreneurship's thrown around a lot. I think people want to be an entrepreneur and then they sort of track backwards to try and figure out how they can become one rather than maybe starting at the beginning, setting themselves up with, you know, figuring out what it is that they want, setting visions, creating actual, you know, some sort of trajectory and priorities and from there building an idea from what is truly meaningful to them.
I think sometimes entrepreneurs, they're sort of perceived as people who just like bet it all on black. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like there's no logic and thought to be able to develop.
I think good
as an
entrepreneurs are really, they're not risk averse, but they do manage the downside. A good entrepreneur will, and I think there's also this kind of thought process that an entrepreneur just has loads of businesses and just bounces between them. But the reality is, if you look at people who are incredibly successful, you can normally chart back to one business that served them incredibly well, that gave them the opportunity and the platform to then go on and do other things. People don't just bounce around between businesses in the early days. They really double down on one and make sure that it really delivers for them.
Yeah, Andy, it might have been you that I heard once say something similar to that that really resonated with me, because when I was earlier in my career, I did sort of, you know, it was hard to control this entrepreneurial thing. And I did try too many side hustles at once and then actually focused on the main hustle. And you do see it now, you know, with social media, we have access to people's lives a lot more than we used to. And with the development of all the other groups and all the things that are going on, especially in dentistry, we have a generation of dentists that are very side hustle focused. And, you know, and I get it. And I think it's important for people to, you know, scratch that itch. But yeah, get that first one right, focus on that. You know, do what's necessary to create a good sort of main hustle, and then build from that.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about business already, but obviously your primary qualification is as a dentist. So how do you balance the mix of making sure you stay at the forefront of clinical dentistry, which is, you know, your core profession and what you deliver for your patients, but also learning broader business skills? What's kind of your approach to that in terms of how you divide out your sort of CPD almost?
Yeah, I think I've fluctuated from one thing to another. The first master's I did was implantology. And then I've recently completed the Masters of Master of Business. And I think one of the hardest things was, you know, wanting to really push myself from a business perspective and push the business and grow and also add on other businesses, but also keep that clinical side going. I think one of the main things that really sort of helped for me was the segmentation of my time and making sure that when I'm doing clinical dentistry, I am focusing on the patient and I'm developing that side, but actually I am allocating time to the business of dentistry.
You're in the present.
And you know, when we're trying to make decisions and, you know, analyze parts of the business and go into the sort of some of the depths of it that will enable the right decision going forward, like actually spending time doing that and trying not to be pulled away from it. And I do think, you know, sort of intention is important, and if you are wanting to improve the business of, you know, if your business, and within dentistry we're in this, it's relatively unique, you know, an associate dentist can be a business and can act very business-like, you know, business owners who have owned their own practice for obvious reasons, you know, business people that are running up to buying a business, getting, you know, there's all these different sort of almost demographics of dentists and you know, dental care professionals. We've got other people, non-dentist practices. And being really intentional of knowing when you need to focus on the business and what areas you need to develop.
And how it
and being
works,
quite
I
self-aware.
Think. And how it's it a works, very, yeah. I think a simple analogy is like we all know how to drive a car, but a lot of us don't actually know how it all works. And it's that, I think, you know, there's so many business owners, not just dental practice owners, who they drive their business because they sort of turn up, but they don't actually understand how it all works. And I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, and I think one of the things with dentistry, typically, and I know it's not typical now because times have changed, but, you know, it's a relatively stable business model, cash flowing, you know, only a dentist can do what a dentist does kind of thing. And I think, you know, we sort of, the industry as a whole has probably gone through quite an extended run of, you know, business is doing well.
It's super robust, isn't it?
That's it, just by being a dentist. And as soon as challenge comes, as soon as things happen that make that business model start to crumble a little bit, people are turning to a solution And it's like, well, if I don't know what my solution is, because I've not been working that muscle very much, what do I do?
But also, I think stress is like a body's response to pressure. So if we have to do something new or something that makes us feel uncomfortable, we get stressed because that's how our body will respond to that. So it always surprises me that given the choice, dentists and business owners and some associates as well who kind of run their own businesses would always favour a clinical course over a business course. But a lack of business competence must surely make owning and running a dental practice more stressful because it's an area you feel uncomfortable about. And because stress is our body's response to pressure, it would make sense to me that perhaps a dentist to focus as much on their business skills and developing those as opposed to purely clinical.
No, yeah, and I'd agree with that. You know, as somebody that I now do a couple of clinical days and per week, and the rest is, you know, business related activities. And, you know, business decisions that you make and business problems that you solve can be longer lasting and impact the level of micromanagement you're doing, the number of times that you're, like you said, getting stressed day to day, because your business is running every day that it's open, whether you're there or not, and things that are happening. If you've, you know, struggled to create, you know, the systems or the business that manages effectively, then you're far more likely to get bothered, hassled, stressed, all of that, than you are from the patients that you're treating. So the business side of it makes it way less stressful.
100%. Was there a point where there was like a dawning realization that you had to start investing in your person and your business development away from being a dentist? Yeah, was it kind of almost like an epiphany where it's like you woke up and you're like,
a light bulb moment.
If I want a future that doesn't revolve me leaning over the back of a dental chair, I have to do things differently.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons I bought a practice was that I was doing, you know, 5-day week, massive NHS contract, 30-minute lunches. Yeah. You know, even though I'd had it in my mind that I wanted to buy a practice and it was always something I was going to do, I potentially jumped early because I was disillusioned by how hard I was working, and I was looking at a list of patients and seeing UDA rates rather than, you know, anything else. And then, you know, moving into private practice and working again, you know, 6-day weeks and really working very, very hard clinically to enable the business to grow, because at the time I wasn't really making any business decisions. It was just, you know, treadmill and running it.
Surviving.
Yeah, and things evolve over time, and, you know, you're going to learn from your own mistakes. You can learn from others, which is better. And then you've got, you know, the academic side, which, you know, people may question the benefit of academic, but often it'll come from, you know, a multitude of other people's trials and errors to create what could be seen as an ideal situation. But I was making a lot of mistakes learning from them. And then I think the big thing for me was the whole, I'm getting to an age, we're going to be settling down, going to be raising family, need to figure that, you know, just starting to actually focus on how my future was going to look. And, you know, realizing that, you know, the last thing I would want to do, I mean, I've got a 4- and a 5-year-old. So this was what, 6-7 years ago in the run up to that. It was like, how am I going to carry on doing this and also raise a family? And I think it was that point, even though I'd always been interested and almost been an amateur business enthusiast in terms of learning, I've always been interested in personal development. But I think at that point, I took more of an active interest, you know, signed up to certain masterminds, you know, the kind of entrepreneurs you see on Facebook. I was going to mastermind sessions. I was paying to be parts of groups of entrepreneurs and people that were business owners and trying to learn as much as I could. So I'd say it was the acknowledgement of future. It was starting to look forwards and thinking, you know, at what point does this type of working run out of road and I just end up, you know, the guy I bought my practice off retired early because of ill health. His business partner, his associate, did the same. So many stories of dentists just burning out that I was like, right, I don't want to be a 50-odd, 60-odd year old dentist with, you know, a crippled over neck, dodgy shoulder, bad knee, bad hip, you know. I need to.
You want to be present for your children as well, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
To, you know, be part of their future.
Exactly.
I know you didn't have them at the time, but
I feel very lucky. My kids probably say they see me too much. You know, their memories of their dad is like, you can't get rid of him.
Which is better memory. It's a better memory.
You clearly got the bug for it after kind of acknowledging that that was going to be your kind of passport to enjoying running business and also enjoying your dentistry, because there wasn't so much pressure on you to deliver clinically. You then went on to do an MBA, a Masters of Business Administration at University College London, gaining a distinction.
Very well done indeed.
An MBA is quite a broad church of learning. So how specifically did this further education support you as a dental business owner?
I think, you know, with the MBA, every single sort of module that's there is, like you said, very general business focused. But when you're doing about, you know, certain things to do with operations, leadership, you know, marketing, economics, accountancy, all that kind of stuff, it's very sort of applicable into dental practice. There are certain things which you need to learn as part of the MBA that would be way more general business, but every single session that we had, every lecture that I listened to and watched, and seminars that we had and live sessions, I was going back to work that next day, and you can see how that can then influence the business that I was running. You know, especially some of the, you know, you mentioned mindset earlier. You know, all some of the stuff to do with leadership and actually running an organization and sort of empowering staff and getting them as part of your team. And then, you know, breaking down business into, I mean, Chris, you mentioned driving, you know, breaking a business down into its component parts and almost looking at it from an engineering eye and seeing how all these different parts fit together and just create a smoother running operation. You know, the MBA really kind of broke down my thought processes and the way I look at my business, and helped me focus on the certain, I guess, jigsaw puzzles that can be slightly tweaked to just create a better picture and a better business.
We did a course recently, Brad, and it's so interesting.
Blueprint for success.
But most of the people in the room, we were saying to them, and you sort of said it right at the beginning, is that because dentistry is pretty comfortable and it's really hard to cock it up, that nobody sort of really, or should I say the vast majority, don't do anything like what you've done. You know, actually, I'm going to analyse. Could I make it better? Could I make it less stressful? Could I make it more successful financially or whatever? And we sort of said to people, so how many of you know what your profit is? And, you know, there was like your blankness around the room. And we were talking about, there was a bunch of guys that we know that they've got a decent number of practices, but no one produces monthly management information. And we said, how can you run a business without knowing what's going on? But it's partly because there's that comfort factor. It's so important, this education, to actually understand it, how you can influence it, and also make you less stressed. As you said right at the beginning, it makes you less stressed.
Yeah, on that, Chris, it's interesting. If you speak to an accountant, and I'm talking NASDAQ accountant, the last couple of times I've spoke to them regarding monthly management accounts, the answer is, we don't typically do that for dentists. So it's an industry-wide thing. You know, it's almost, you know, it's a definite, you know, stuff like that, understanding how the business is going month by month. Because, you know, it's all very well getting to the end of the year and looking back going, oh, okay, you know, good, or, oh, shit. Mm. Or, you know, but unless you can see what's happening.
It's been and gone. That year's gone, yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I suppose that it goes back to what you were saying, Brad, in a way, and we've noticed it with valuations, is really up until probably COVID, not a great deal ever really changed in dental practices. They sort of like moseyed along, looking okay. You know, if they set up a new one, got a bigger contract, put new chairs or something. But in the vast main, if nothing really major had changed, they sort of all look very similar year on year, really. And then COVID has been a complete revelation. Yeah. And I think it's so important, even more important now, that people understand what's going on and are educated with what they need to understand about running their business.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. But Brad, I'm conscious that an MBA won't be for everybody, but equally developing non-clinical skills is crucial. Patient communication, managing finance, leadership, you know, management, all those aspects. So what would your advice be for people who are thinking about buying a dental practice or even owners, how they can develop in this area if they don't want to make that big step?
MBA light.
And do an MBA, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that, you know, I do actually feel that some people just, well, most people that I speak to tend to struggle with this. It's actually, first of all, actually trying to figure out what it is that they're wanting sort of from their business in terms of how do they want their business to serve them? Where are their priorities? What does, you know, their life look like in 5 years on its current trajectory? And, you know, can they sustain what they're doing for that and be happy? Mm. And I chat to dentists, you know, relatively frequently, and I've got to say every single person that I speak to sometimes struggles to answer that. And then from there, I think...
Is that because they don't think about it, Brad?
It's because they don't think about it. They come to me with, you know, issues where the diaries are drying up. They don't know how to do marketing. They're thinking about adding another couple of surgeries. They know how much it's going to cost, but they don't know whether they'll be able to service the debt to be able to do it. Mm. And then, you know, I'll ask certain questions like, well, and you know, I've got an associate who wants to do more days, but and these various questions. And then I'll typically ask certain questions about, like you said, about sort of profit and, you know, do they know the marketing that they're doing at the moment? You know, what is it that they're doing and how effective is it? Can they say what level of treatment comes from the marketing that they carry out? Do they know where the profits come? And certain questions that they just don't seem to know, because in order to offer advice, you often need to know what the answer to those questions are. So, you know, there's definitely a certain level of becoming self-aware, then becoming, you know, business aware, and then being able to identify where these improvements and development comes from. I think dentistry is probably ripe for business education. There's a lot of, you know, little bit of sort of disjointedness, and I think sometimes the stuff that's out there tends to focus a lot on the sexy stuff, which is understandable. I do think that, you know, focusing on the real core evergreen skills that are going to enable business success long term, you know, is going to be valuable. But yeah, I think business awareness, self awareness, and just basically accepting that you want to develop and being open to that. I don't know whether that's a very good answer, guys.
I think it is. I think what you said about those core skills, you know, they never go out of fashion. You know, the principles of running our different businesses, your different businesses. We need to be able to manage people. We need to motivate people. We need to lead people. You know, we need to understand our finances. None of this is business specific. They're just good principles to running a business.
It sort of sounds like, doesn't it, that the people that come to speak to you are normally got an issue of some description, as opposed to the whole rump of dental practices. They could all learn. If they all learn, they would be better either businessmen, as in the fact of they might be more profitable, or they might understand their business better. It seems to be the shame bit, isn't the fact of, well, I've got an issue, so therefore I'll reach out, as opposed to actually saying, oh, actually, it would be a really good idea if I did understand how my practice works.
I do wonder if some of that comes back to mindset. You know, Chris mentioned you know, the blueprint course that we did, and there was a practice owner there, and everything's going really well in her life. Everything's working out amazingly, yet still came to learn and develop and look for some one percenters. And I think the mindset of, I can always grow, I can always get better. You don't wait for things to go wrong, then fix it. You're always on this quest of, what can I learn? How can I add value? You know, where's my next development opportunity coming from? So I think that mindset as a start point is critical. Just go back to your own MBA thing, Brad. You've got a practice and a family, and an MBA is not a small undertaking. How did you fit it all in?
Because yeah, most I was people, say time. How long does it take?
Most people believe they're busy. Most people go, "Oh, I've got my time's full. I haven't got any capacity for anything new." So, how did you fit an MBA, which is a significant undertaking, into your life?
From a head space point of view, I made sure that when I was doing MBA stuff, I was focusing on it. When I was doing ivory dental stuff, I was focusing on it. I actually was writing my book. I was finishing my book off when I was starting the MBA as well. So when I did that, I was doing that. When I was with the family, I was with the family. So it was very much, you know, when I was doing one thing, I was focusing on doing that one thing. And I do get easily distracted. So that was quite a challenge. From a logistical point of view, I've always been an early bird as well. So I allocated specific time early in the morning.
I remember those days, Brad, our very early morning conversations.
I know. You know what? It's like, you know, get yourself into the right kind of headspace for the day and feel productive. You know, I'm a massive advocate of that. I'm not suggesting the 5 a.m. club for everybody, but there's a definite benefit to me for feeling a certain way for my day. Andy, I just want to touch on what you just said about that dentist who you mentioned. And again, I have said this before, but you know, everything that we experience now is an echo of what's happened in the past, and the positive echo that rebounds is often a lot more delayed than the negative one. So if I stopped, you know, doing anything in my business today, if I stopped marketing, if I stopped, you know, helping the staff, if I stopped now. Then the negative consequence would tend to come reasonably quickly. But the positive echo tends to take a little bit longer. So, you know, if you're going to be developing yourself and if you're going to be trying to impact things, but often, you know, it takes a bit longer and it takes a bit more time, and we need to be patient, but we need to work on it. And it's something which, you know, if we're looking at life through a longer lens than just, you know, tomorrow and next week, you know, we need to bear that in mind. So I think that dentist at your course who was doing something when she's actually already doing reasonably well has got the right kind of idea.
It's getting that information accessible to people, isn't it? So that they're interested in.
Yes. If you had to distill down perhaps just two or three skills that entrepreneurs, business owners really needed to double down on and get good at, what would you narrow it down to?
I definitely think try and minimize distraction and this whole single tasking, where trying to focus on what you're doing rather than trying to multitask everything all in one go at the same time and be distracted and, you know, little 10% of everything, you know, get 100% of something. I think that's a big one. Yeah. I think, you know, a creative brain takes you away to ideas. So I think the single tasking is a big one. And I actually also think as well is this idea of network. And, you know, one of the big benefits to me was actually establishing a really strong professional network, you know, of which, you know, you're part of that, Andy, actually. You know, this group of people
it's funny you say that, Brad. I think this network thing has come up two or three times. You know, we obviously talk to lots of different people, and there is a theme that a lot of people who are successful say, I really value my network. I consciously develop my network. I lean into my network. They use me. So I think a power of a good network is a really important part.
A bit like counselling. No. You know, it's no surprises and no risk, you know, in the fact of people don't call you a twat, or they do, but in a nice way, if you know what I mean.
I think Andy has called me a twat before, but you know,
but he did it in a nice way. I'm sure he did it in a nice, constructive way.
It came with love, Brad.
It was done from the heart.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's very industry specific. It's a certain type of problem and a way in which people that come together with, you know, common profession, for me, in terms of profession, you know, we've got a sort of a professional connections in terms of certain issues that we might, you know, you've got unique knowledge and people within sort of my network, I think all of them have got far greater knowledge of certain areas than I do. And I think that that is massively helpful to me, to be able to call on people and ask questions, and hopefully it's reciprocated. So yeah, the network and actually my network, even though it was relatively passive, it came because of shared interests. I think, right. Yeah, leaning on your network, definitely.
Cool. Cool. Brad, it's been great. It's a lovely conversation. I always enjoy time that we spend together. Even as a returning guest, we could gloss over these two questions, but you're not going to get away.
I want to see
because every episode, we've always asked our guests the same two questions, so we can't let you go without answering them yourself.
Can you remember
again,
what the last ones were?
I can't.
I should have had a listen to make sure you
were
going to double up.
It's going to be cringy if it's the same.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
So the first one is your...
Quick, producer, have a look. See what the two questions were.
So the first
send us a
one
message.
Is you're a fly on a wall. Fly on a wall in a certain situation. Who's there? What's going on? What's happening?
You know what? I think now I'd probably say I'd be quite interested to be a fly on the wall in the home of Elon Musk chatting. He's got a son, hasn't he? I want to be a fly on the wall and listen to Elon Musk having a chat with his little boy. I'd just be really interested to know how somebody like him reacts, like just how he acts at home with his little boy. Because
does he communicate like a normal father son relationship, or is he a little bit peculiar?
Yeah, I'd just be really interested. You only ever see
the brain the size of a planet.
Yeah, so that's
yes,
a bit of a weird answer, but that's kind of what I think.
That'd
right
be cool.
Now.
That'd be cool.
I think a lot of people would be interested in that, actually, aren't they?
And if you can meet somebody, you can sit down in a nice comfy chair and a glass of something and have a chat. Who would that be?
You know, this might have been the answer I did last time, but actually for me it would be some world leader, you know, someone like, you know, your Barack Obama or you're Tony Blair. I'm not saying that you don't have to be a massive fan of anybody, but just to sit down and have a conversation over a drink and just pick their brains and just get their unedited views and opinions on stuff. Mm. And that'd be interesting.
Yeah, big jobs, big jobs and big decisions.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah, massively massively scrutinized.
I think only certain people can carry that. Yeah, I think carrying the responsibility of those decisions at that level.
What's that film? There's a film where Jeremy Irons, it's about the crash of 2008 or something, and he basically makes the decision. It's based on true fact, and he basically is the CEO, and they're like, he's the big baller that they bring in for these massive meetings. And basically he just says, we're going to sell it all. And they're all saying, but he says, that's why you pay me the big bucks.
Yeah.
Sell it all, he said. And basically, you have to be first. Mm. And they were the first guys who started selling everything.
Right.
So as they lost money, but didn't go down. But it was like that. Yeah. Those people who make those decisions, sell it all.
The buck has to stop somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's all or nothing, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And making the decision, you know.
Absolutely.
Don't prevaricate.
Brad, we'll let you go. I know you've got a very, very busy week ahead of you.
Yes.
So we'll let you go and get your bits and pieces together. Always good to spend time with you. Thank you very much indeed. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks again. Cheers, Brad.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.